We're talking about sexual abuse in the clergy on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a difficult conversation, and this hour could be disturbing, so please take care as we talk about child abuse and our state's Catholic clergy accused of sex abuse. That list is growing. Meanwhile, Wisconsin is not unique. USA Today Network investigated more than 1,200 former priests, Catholic brothers, and Catholic school officials accused of sex abuse. Most never face criminal charges. What are your thoughts on the recent investigations of former priests being accused of sexual abuse? What would justice look like to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Lindsay Schnell is a national correspondent for USA Today based in Portland, Oregon. She recently published a report about Catholic sex abuse and what happens to accused priests. Lindsay, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How did you go about determining the number of priests accused of sexual abuse throughout the U.S., considering there's not a central list that currently exists?
Yeah, we wrote about that in our article. You know, there have been releases from the church, from various dioceses and archdioceses in the last 2 years. It happened a little sporadically since the scandal first came into public view in 2002 after the Boston Globe's explosive pieces, but we really started to see releases from the church after the Pennsylvania grand jury report, which was published in August of 2018. But as you said, there's no central list. What it means to be credibly accused varies from diocese to diocese. So we worked off both lists that the church had released and then also Bishop Accountability, a website that lists accused priests, many of whom have died. And we wanted to get to 1,000. We thought that was a really good number. We thought that could provide a really good sample size. We wound up, you know, doing backgrounds on more than 1,200, and then we built a database of, it was almost 700. It was 699 last known addresses. And from there, we decided to go knock on doors.
When you knocked on doors, what did you ask? What were you seeking?
So first, of course, we confirmed that the person living there was the former priest. And then we first asked them about the allegations. You know, how would they respond? We had done a lot of research on every individual whose door we went and knocked. And then we asked them, what were they doing now? Did they receive a pension from the church? Did their neighbors know about their past? What did they think about statute of limitation reform that's going on across the country in various states? Did they believe that their neighbors had a right to know about their past? Were they around children regularly? Questions like that. And what I was surprised by is dozens of them spoke to us.
That they didn't close the door.
Right, exactly. For me personally, I went and I made the first knock. I was just north of Seattle in Oak Harbor, Washington. And when I knocked, I knew right away when this man answered the door, Barry Ashwell, that it was him, because I had read a lot on him and I had seen photos. And he told me, I don't want to talk, but he stood there with the door open for almost 20 minutes. So we kept talking, and I think that happened to a lot of people. But for others, they were open, and not all of them talked to us. Some of them did close the door in our face, but dozens of them did speak, and I thought that was fascinating.
Lindsay Schnell is with us. She's a national correspondent for USA Today, and she recently published an investigation about sexual abuse in the clergy. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Lindsay, you went all over the country. You and your colleagues, you talked with neighbors and school officials, employers, church leaders, and victims. Were they aware that a priest accused of sexual abuse was living near them or living nearby?
No, most of them were not. And so what's important to remember is that, you know, the only way you can get on a sex offender registry is if you are convicted in a criminal case. sometimes it's part of a plea deal. Other times it's from a judgment passed down by a judge or by a jury. A lot of these men were never criminally charged. We know that it takes survivors decades after the alleged abuse to come forward. And often by then, statute of limitation laws have expired. So there's no course of criminal action or civil action that you can take. So many of these men were acknowledged by the church as abusers, but then just sort of sent along their way. And the question we were trying to answer was, did the church essentially wash their hands of them once these men left, or were they keeping tabs on them? There was not, again, there's not a central rule or a central list. But what our reporting shows is that most of the diocese and archdiocese did wash their hands of them. And now these men are living openly next to schools and daycares and families and without any sort of oversight from either the church or local authorities.
This year, Wisconsin started releasing names of credibly accused clergy members. How does a diocese decide who goes on the accused list?
That varies from diocese to diocese, which is part of what survivors groups and victims advocates have pushed back on and have been vocal about, that there's no central rule, and so it can be all over the place. I cannot speak to what each individual diocese in Wisconsin does, but it's safe to say that they're different, which is based on, you know, which survivors groups and victims advocates would say is not okay.
What states do you see law enforcement, state government, taking more of an active role, regardless of statute of limitations?
Well, I think statute of limitation reform is where it starts. That's what matters. You can't, the authorities cannot get involved in something that when someone wasn't charged. So you have seen, we've seen states across the country both reform statute of limitation laws, but also, you know, after the Pennsylvania grand jury report got released in August of 2018, since then, 21 other state attorneys general have launch their own investigations. And so that's one step. Some states are doing statute of limitation reform and don't have a grand jury or AG investigation. Some states just have an AG investigation. Some states have both and there's overlap. And, you know, then you see New York is an example of that. They passed the Child Victims Act where survivors can come forward and file claims decades after the fact. And then, if I remember correctly, they are also currently, their attorney general is investigating the church.
As we wrap up here, going back to the doors, knocking on doors, talking with priests, did they express any remorse in any of these conversations?
In the conversations that I had with priests, they did not. And then in the conversations many of my colleagues had, they did not. And I thought that that was shocking, that right after being so surprised that so many of them spoke with us, the second most surprising thing to me was the lack of remorse. The person whose door I knocked on north of Seattle, you know, when he kept saying, I'm done with this, I'm done with this, I've moved on. And I said, well, do you think your victims would say the same thing, that they're done with this? And he retorted, you know, I've had it with victims. I was shocked by that. And not everyone had that callous of a response, but many of them wanted to know, why were we asking questions about something that happened so long ago?
Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
Lindsay Schnell, a national correspondent for USA Today. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network.